Your dad was John McCain.
Yes. My dad was a huge music fan. I'm going to tell you right now, my dad loved Willie Nelson. And people are like, you can't say you liked Willie Nelson because he dodged his taxes, blah, blah, blah. Well, he loved Willie Nelson. He did.
Everybody thinks they can do it. How can I become a professional wrestler? You really can't.
I pulled out the gun and I shot two times.
We have a complicated family. We were all raised to argue with each other with intensity, with passion, but also to love each other.
This is WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome to WTMJ Conversations. I'm your host, Libby Collins. What comes to mind when you think about long-distance truckers? Big, burly guys who spend hours in the cab of a rig, eating food at truck stops, and they're all in a hurry to get to a destination. But Hope Savera from Hartford sees a different side of those road warriors with Mother Trucker Yoga. Now, I'm going to get to that title in just a minute, but first, Hope, let's talk a little bit about you. I said you were from Hartford. Did you grow up here in Wisconsin?
Yes, I am a born and raised Wisconsinite and very proud of it, by the way.
Well, and we're proud to have you here. But, you know, going back to when you were a kid, you had a lot of issues.
Yeah, I always think that I grew up in a great household, loving parents, but there were definitely some challenges. As a teen, started to struggle with anxiety and depression and an eating disorder, addiction. And it was hard. It was hard to struggle with those things in secret and struggle with those things amongst your peers at a time in life where, you know, if you were struggling with mental health, like back in the 90s and early 2000s, that was not cool. Like that wasn't something that was socially accepted. And so there was a lot of fear and a lot of insecurity that I carried with that. And just really kind of trying to figure out a solution to help me. My parents had done all the therapy route, had done all of the intervention stuff, and just nothing was working for me.
How old were you when you first started to notice you weren't feeling the same way as a lot of other people?
Yeah, you know, really from an early age, when I was in grade school, I really struggled to fit in. And I had friends and, like, you know, I was invited to birthday parties, but I always felt like I had to work really hard to be accepted, to be in. And I really started to notice that in middle school when I just started to look at life differently. The way I dressed, the things I wanted to do in life, I felt like everybody else wants all this other stuff to go to college and do these things. And I'm like, that doesn't feel like me. And so there was that piece going on. But then there was this other piece of just not liking myself. And that comes a lot from growing up in a household. My dad is an alcoholic and my parents had a little bit of an emotionally dysfunctional relationship. And again, they only knew what they knew. And so I have no hard feelings and really empathy because we're all struggling with something, right? But they didn't realize how much of that was being transferred to their children and particularly myself. And I really took that on, like, what's wrong with me? Because I see these things going on. I hear these things going on. This must be my fault. And it's interesting now that I have children that that is the message that children then somehow create in their head when they see something. Even as a parent now, you think, oh, this is innocent, or, oh, I didn't mean it that way. And we didn't have conversations as kids. It was go to your room. It was don't cry. And so I never had an opportunity to really express myself and really understand what was going on in my household and that it wasn't my fault. And so as a result, I internalized that. I internalized those conversations. I internalized what I had seen and heard and thought it was me. There was something wrong with me. And that eventually turned into addiction, that eventually turned into depression and anxiety. And I struggled for probably 15 years with this from 12 years old into my 20s, and just kind of back and forth in and out of recovery, trying to figure out something to help me.
And you also had an eating disorder.
Yeah, that was a big crux of where I kind of drove a lot of my anxiety and a lot of my confused thoughts and a lot of my isolation or feelings of just hopelessness. I buried them in food. I buried them because that was what I couldn't control. That was something that I could hold on to and say, everything else in my life is chaos. My house is chaos. My friendships are chaos, but I can control this. There's one thing that I've learned about addiction now in my 40s, looking back. Most addicts are just looking for some type of control in their life, in a life that they feel like they have no control over anything. Addiction, in a sense, does give you that sense of control because this is the one thing that you are saying yes or no to.
And you were what, bulimic?
I like to think of, I did the variety pack. And so I got to have humor, right? If you don't have humor, what's the point in life? And so bulimia, anorexia, just kind of a smorgasbord jumping back and forth between one and then the other. And really, I think a big part of that going from anorexia to bulimia to kind of okay back to bulimia was a trying to get well and trying to do well in my health for my parents' sake. Because it was like, okay, I'm not binging and purging anymore. Well, then I'll just calorie restrict. Now my parents think I'm fine. Okay, now I'm going to eat again, but I don't have a good relationship with food. So now I'll binge and purge again. And so there's this disconnect with what is healthy and what is right, and really becomes, we talk a lot about mental health now in 2025. We didn't back in 2000s. So I had no concept of what was going on in my mind, and that was a big part of the dysfunction I was feeling.
When did you get involved in yoga?
So my parents had done everything they could traditionally. I went from counselor to counselor, therapist to therapist, and they just kind of didn't know what else to do with me. And I was maybe 17, 18, and I was working at a rec center in Hartford. And one of my coworkers randomly walked up to me one day in passing and goes, "You look like someone that would practice yoga." And when I mean random, I mean it was like she walked by and was like, "Hey, Hope." And then all of a sudden out of her mouth was like, "You look like someone that would practice yoga. Have you ever thought about that?" Now, full disclosure, I don't think I ever even heard the word yoga before that point. Like, that never once crossed my mind. But in that moment, it was like something turned on. And I went home, got on my dial-up internet, and I looked for a class. I found one in Germantown. So if you're familiar with the Wisconsin area, it's like 20 minutes from Hartford. And I told my mom, "Hey, I think I want to take a yoga class." And that Wednesday night yoga class became my weekly ritual of second chances. And I still remember walking out of the door after that first yoga class. First of all, I was 20 years younger than the youngest person in that class. Like, everyone else was in their 40s, and not here is this 17, 18-year-old girl. And I turned back around to look into the class, and my yoga mat rolled up under my arm. And for the first time in as long as I could remember, my mind was clear. I felt normal. I felt nothing and everything all at the same time. I had never felt that feeling before, ever. And despite the fact, mind you, in that yoga class, I was shaking like a banshee. I was inhaling when I should be exhaling. I didn't know any of the poses. Like, I was like, what the heck is going on? But something changed in me that day. And for the first time, I felt real hope. I felt like there's a chance for me to live a normal life, to get into recovery. Like, if this is that feeling, I need more of that.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
It was the first place I told someone publicly that I was struggling with depression, that I was struggling with addiction.
Hope Zavera talks about how yoga changed her life.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome back. I'm Libby Collins. We're talking with yoga instructor and entrepreneur, Hope Zavera. Did you do yoga more than just that once a week? I mean, did you start adding more classes? Did you practice it at home?
Really, for that next year or so, year and a half, I just went to that Wednesday yoga class. I didn't really know of any other yoga classes in the area. I didn't really do it so much at home. I mean, I had tried to stay somewhat active. I liked walking and, you know, doing other things, but not really like a yoga practice. And then one day, about a year and a half into practicing at that gym, my instructor comes up to me after class and says, "Hey, you look like someone that would teach yoga. Have you ever considered teaching yoga?" Now, at the time, I was going to Marquette here in Milwaukee to study communications and theology, because I thought, you go to a four-year college, that's what you're supposed to do. And I was interested in that kind of area of expertise and a career path. And something in me that day was just like, you need to go take a yoga training. So I went home, got on the internet, found a training out in Colorado in Rollinsville up in the mountains. It was a 30-day training. And I remember going downstairs to tell my mom and dad, I'm like, I'm doing a yoga training. And here's the crazy part. So if you know Marquette is a faith-based school, right? So I have to go to my professors, because this is a May, like I'm going to go all of May. And I have to go to them and tell them I need to take my exams early because I'm going to a yoga training.
And what was their reaction?
Okay, like the stars aligned and they all were like, okay, no problem. When would you like to take them? And now I was like, oh, so this must be meant to be. Like, this is something clearly I'm supposed to do. So I go to this training. First day, we sit down in the circle. There's 11 of us. And we're going around introducing ourselves and saying why we're here. And there was a moment after we all introduced ourselves. And I'm sitting there looking at everyone in the circle. And there was just something that came over me that said, this is exactly where you're supposed to be. And this is exactly what you're supposed to be doing. So I went back home after that. And I started teaching, and September was about to roll around, and I put my admissions on hold for that year till January. January rolled around. At that time, I was teaching like 18 classes a week. I was loving it, and I said I wasn't going to come back to school. I thought, this is where I belonged. I felt purpose. I was good at it. It just came naturally to me, and it was almost this like great double dip in a sense of I was helping other people. And I found something I was really good at and I enjoyed, but it was also helping me in a relaxation. I was just kind of talking about life, and I had said for the first time publicly that I was struggling with depression. It was the first time I ever said publicly that I was struggling with addiction. And it was just such a great place to not only find me and be able to share me in a real, raw, and complete way. But I found that the more that I shared with people things that I had gone through, things that I had figured out, how yoga had helped me, people were coming up to me after class going, oh my gosh, thank you so much for sharing, Hope, because I've struggled like that for years too. Or I know exactly what you're feeling. Or, you know, that brought tears to my eyes because what you said just hit my heart so deeply. And I wasn't looking for sympathy. I wasn't looking for like people to come and pray for me or anything. But it was like I was connecting with people on a level far beyond just physical poses and yoga. And it was helping me because when addiction is a secret, it keeps you captive and hostage. That is one thing with addiction is the more you keep it secret, the bigger it becomes and the harder it is to break free. And the more that people know and the more that you kind of break out of those chains, the less hold it has on you. And yoga was becoming this tool for me to do that for not only myself, but then all of a sudden for other people as well. And it was just this magical thing.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
When I went into that outpatient treatment, it was one of the best things I ever did in my life, but it was also great because yoga had given me so much more tools than they had ever seen before.
Hope Zavera talks about how she overcame addiction.
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
I'm your host, Libby Collins. Let's return to our conversation with yoga instructor and entrepreneur, Hope Zavera.
You've mentioned your addiction, and it sounds as if your life really became yoga focused. Did you in some ways become addicted to yoga?
You know, that's really interesting. I think there was a period that I recognized that I got into recovery. I ended up going into an outpatient treatment about 2 years into teaching yoga. So the yoga and the outpatient treatment, it was like finally right place. And interesting, when I went into that outpatient treatment at Rogers Memorial, it was one of the best things I ever did in my life. But it was also great because the other women there, yoga had given me so much more tools than they had ever seen before. And so I'm listening and watching these women, some of them that had been in outpatient treatment 2-3 times already, some of them twice my age. And I sat there in that circle. Again, you can kind of see a theme in my life here. And I remember sitting in that circle with these women and I'm thinking to myself, I don't want to be them. Like I had so much more insight and foresight and hindsight than a lot of these women did. They were just going through the motions. And it was such a great moment of like, I don't want to be this. So I need to use all of the tools that I have to get out of this. And between that and yoga and just a really deep rooted desire and faith and belief that I am worth more than this, that there's a purpose for me, I was able to step into recovery medication free and utilizing the tools that I have. But there was a point in my yoga journey, I will say, that it kind of scared me because I was like, this is not the life I want either. Because it was like, okay, if I'm teaching yoga, then I have to be vegan. If I'm teaching yoga, then I can't do this. And it became this like prison a little bit. And I don't talk about this very much, but like it became this prison of everyone sees me as a yoga teacher. And they had these like preconceived ideas of how and who Hope Zavera is supposed to be. And it became a big struggle for me because I'm like, I'm more than this. This isn't me. I don't believe in these things, or I don't want to eat this way or live this way. Just because I teach yoga and I love yoga doesn't mean I have to like be in this box. And so, yes, there was a period of time where whether it was socially imposed or self-imposed or a combination of both, that then I was like, okay, I need to step back from this.
A lot of people have a perception of people who practice yoga. Everybody goes to Lululemon. Everybody drinks soy lattes. Like you said, many of them are vegan or at least pescatarian. Is that a misconception about people who practice yoga on a regular basis? Not somebody who just occasionally goes to a yoga class, but somebody who is really absorbed into the lifestyle.
There is a section of people that are living a yogic and Ayurvedic style lifestyle where that is very true for them. That is very real for them. But I think a lot of people are caught in the mix of like, I like Lululemon yoga pants and I go to a yoga class.
They are comfortable, aren't they?
And I go to a yoga class and I do drink soy lattes and therefore I'm going to embrace this image. And then there are the people that are very devout to it. And I just found that that devoutness was not where I wanted to be because I felt like I couldn't be me. And so I kind of stepped back from that where I like to question things and ask, why am I doing this? Who told me to do this? And is this right for me? And I don't think enough people question things in life. And so I started questioning those things even in the yoga space about 5 or so years in teaching. I even started looking at some of the yoga poses I was teaching. And I'm like, is this hurting people or helping people? Like putting your leg behind your head helps you with what? Standing on your head. If you can't even stand on 2 feet or 1 foot in tree pose, why are you trying to master the headstand? I started looking at the entire process of yoga and teaching and practicing and kind of was starting to pull it apart and say, what's true now? And also what needs to be updated. So I stepped out of the yoga space and spent about 10 years studying functional mechanics, the core, and really just like biomechanics of how the body moves. And I came back to the yoga space and I was like, getting rid of this pose, getting rid of this pose, getting rid of this thing. Because 5,000 years ago, we didn't know what we know now. And there were a lot of poses and practices that were hurting people's bodies. And so that's when I just started to really step into my own and teach my own style of yoga and really embrace the person that I was. And I have yoga to thank for that because it gave me a platform and a voice to do that, especially as a teacher. And that's really when I feel like my own ideas and my own personality really started to show and the tools that I had to offer people. I had a yoga studio for 15 years and I always felt like there was something more for me. Like, this isn't where I belong. I love Hartford, but I feel like there's a bigger audience for me to serve, but I didn't know who or where.
Still ahead on WTMJ Conversations.
He looks at me and says, do you have anything for truck drivers? And I throw up my hands and say, Mother Trucker Yoga. He looks at me and says, that's brilliant. You want to go into business together?
Hope Zavera talks about how she established Mother Trucker Yoga.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
And I'm Libby Collins. Our guest today is Hope Zavera. She's the woman behind Mother Trucker Yoga. And now we come to Mother Trucker Yoga. How did you go from running a yoga studio and having, I'm sure, many, many clients come on a regular basis to classes to establishing a business for truckers?
Well, at the close of my studio in 2019, just 3 months before COVID hit, at that point, I had served more than 10,000 students. I had taught all over the country at conferences. I had a successful school. So I didn't have to step away from that. It was more of an internal feeling of like, this isn't where I belong. And so for 2 years, I had been kind of praying like, okay, universe, okay, God, show me what my next sign is because I don't know where I should be or what I should do. And then my husband invites me to a local business mixer in Allington, Wisconsin. He is in local government. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to go. It's all old people and farmers and people I know. It's going to be boring. He's like, no, 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 you should just come. And so I said, okay, fine, I'll come. So I walk in the door and sure enough, know all everyone there and their cliques and talking about tractors and whatever. And I'm like, okay, this is gonna be super boring. And so I go over to this cocktail table and here's this guy, never seen him before. And we start talking and I'm trying to pitch him corporate wellness. I thought that might be a direction I want to go in. I had clients like Harley Davidson, AT&T at the time. I was working on something with Kohl's Corporate. And I thought that's my next thing. And he looks at me and says, do you have anything for truck drivers? Like in the cab of the truck. And I think I'm funny sometimes. And I throw up my hands and say, Mother Trucker Yoga. Really just trying to get a rise out of this guy. Trying to make a slightly awkward conversation with a stranger a little bit more tolerable. And he does not skip a beat. He looks at me and says, that's brilliant. You want to go into business together? Now, my husband and I, I am the balloon in the relationship. I am the let's jump and figure it out. He's the rock. He's the one that says, let's go home and think about it and say no tomorrow. And I look at him and he goes, you should totally do it. So we shook on it and we both did a little research that night, and no one that I could find in the trucking space was doing wellness the way that I thought it should be done. And so he called me up the next morning. He's like, are we doing this, partner? And I said, yep. And in 4 months, we built a business from scratch. I pretty much put everything together, my vision, programs, all of that. And then a year later, I bought him out of the business.
All right. So let's talk about the lifestyle of a trucker.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned at the top of the show, big, burly, eat all that junk food, you stop at Buc-ee's or wherever, and really don't move around a lot because they spend so many hours a day in that rig. What was it that drew you to that, that you said, I can help these guys?
You know, it was really my dad. Despite the strained relationship I had with him in my teens into my 20s, I also watched him break his body for a job that was very thankless to him. He was a sewer pipe layer. He was the guy 80 feet down in the hole doing the stuff that nobody ever wants to do, walking around in the stuff I don't even want to mention. And he was really good at it. He was exceptional at his job, got paid pennies on the dime, not the dollar, the dime. And just his body broke because of it. He had to retire at 55. At one point in time, he was belly crawling onto the porch to smoke a cigarette because he couldn't even walk. That is how bad his body was. And all he got in return was, you get 6 weeks of leave with your insurance coverage. You have to be back by then. And I watched that repeatedly as I grew up. And so I really saw a lot of my dad in these drivers, a thankless job that nobody even recognizes. You're overlooked, underpaid, and there's a stigma about you because you do a job that you didn't go get a fancy degree for. You're not wearing a suit and tie, that you're being judged for that. And I really kind of attached to them that this is unacceptable and I can help you. I can fix this problem. And when I started looking at the couple of other programs that were in trucking 9 years ago now, they were just what I call gym rat style exercises. Here, do these jumping jacks in front of a truck. Hey, do these push-ups. Well, drivers have bad knees, bad backs, they're overweight. Who's going to be doing that stuff, let alone out in a parking lot, dirty, in the dark? Like last time I checked, when I pull into a truck parking lot, nobody's out there exercising. There's a reason for that. It's not just because they're unfit and unhealthy. It's because it's gross, disgusting, and not safe. And so I thought, I can fix this problem. I couldn't help my dad at the time, but I can help these men and women.
Describe, though, what it's like for a trucker. I mean, I mentioned their rig. They actually live inside of that cab.
Yeah. So if you're working in an office, you have a 10 by 10 cubicle. Imagine that is your office. That is your bedroom. That is your kitchen. That is your living room. That is your makeshift bathroom. Some of them carry now like disposable toilets. Like that is everything. If you have a dog you travel with, that's where your dog sleeps. That's where you play with your dog. That's where you do everything there. In a tiny little 10 by 10 cubicle that travels with you everywhere. And so that really is the lifestyle of a driver. They wake up in the morning in the same space. If they're a solo driver, they're alone 24 hours a day, except for maybe when they stop to unload or they stop at the truck stop and they're interacting with other people. And today, I feel like it's almost worse than it was back in the 90s and later than that even, because now cell phones create even more isolation. 20, 30 years ago, drivers were sitting in lounges. They were sitting in the restaurants and they were talking with their fellow drivers. Now, restaurants are closing because prices are expensive. They can't get workers. And phones and digital technology are really keeping drivers now in their trucks longer versus getting out and talking with their fellow driver, which is just creating more mental health issues, more challenges, even more. Suicide is incredibly high in trucking compared to other industries because of the isolation. And so there are more than just, yes, diabetes is an issue in trucking. Yes, high blood pressure. Yes, obesity. But not enough people talk about the mental health challenges that drivers face that are leading them to depression, anxiety, isolation issues, but also suicide.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
She goes, I can get in and out of my truck and I don't have pain. My arthritis pain in my hands and feet are almost gone. I have better circulation. My neck doesn't hurt anymore.
Hope Zavira talks about incorporating yoga for truckers into your daily life.
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome back. I'm Libby Collins. We're talking with Mother Trucker Yoga's Hope Zavira. So you were looking at the entire lifestyle when you developed your program for your business.
Yes.
What did you look at first?
The first thing I looked at was the fact that they are sitting for 14 to 16 hours a day. And if I work at home, I have a home office. If you feel like you need to, you can get up and walk around, right? You can go to the coffee maker. You can go do some steps. You can go to the bathroom, stretch your legs, twist and turn, whatever you want to do. Like, you have that freedom. Like, nothing bad is going to happen to you. But with a driver, they are seatbelted in to their desk, essentially, and they can't get out. And the challenge is, outsiders will say, well, they just got to stop more frequently. And I caution people when that's their response, because they don't understand a driver's lifestyle. The more they stop, the less money they're making. And so every time they stop, they delay their route and they delay their delivery. They'll be penalized if they're late. That could lend them into traffic where now there's even more complications. So a lot of drivers don't drink water because of that. They aren't getting out. And then it's a long time on the road, mentally fatiguing. So when they do get to their drop point, they're so tired then that they don't want to get out. They're like, oh, I'm so exhausted. And it's like, no, you need to move. So that sitting long periods of time really was something I dialed into. And I was like, well, we can definitely fix this. But the other piece was, if drivers are sitting all the time and they feel too tired once they're done for the day, why not bring more movement and exercise to them in the driver's seat?
How do you do that and stay focused?
Good question. So I had done a lot of trainings and certifications and teaching in chair yoga and just different types of health issues for other people outside of trucking. So I kind of took all that knowledge and applied it into this. And a lot of them are just simple things that they can do while driving. So first thing is something as simple as a pelvic tilt. So arcing the back and rounding the back while they're sitting in the driver's seat is not only going to create a loosening of the lumbar muscles, but it's going to help create blood flow through the pelvis to the legs and back up to the heart again. It can help improve digestion. It can help reduce neck pain, improve posture. Something as simple as that. Rolling the shoulders while they're driving, holding on to the steering wheel and pulling forward to arc the back and open the chest, and then rounding the back, stretching the wrists on the steering wheel, stretching the neck, even doing simple breathing exercises while driving. All of these things they are very capable of doing while on the road safely, right from the driver's seat. And I look at this is bonus. Like, they get to do their job and keep their body healthy and fit with small, simple changes.
Now, when you first approached your first group of truckers and said, okay, I'm going to help you get healthy, what was their reaction?
So I partnered up with a nonprofit organization in trucking at that time. Someone had introduced me to them, and they're like, we can give you a test group of drivers that are going to do what you say. They're very loyal to the cause. Like, they'll be open. So they gave me 8 drivers, and I met with them for 8 weeks. And I said, hey, here's my program. These are the videos. I want you to watch these and do these. Find ones that you like. And every single week we'll check in. And by the end of that 8 weeks, I still remember one driver, Adela. And she's now, I'm good friends with her still. She's got to be 70s. And she said to me, she goes, Hope, I kind of laughed the first time I watched these videos because I thought, these are so simple. These seem almost silly. But she goes, I can get in and out of my truck and I don't have pain. My arthritis pain in my hands and feet are almost gone. I have better circulation. My neck doesn't hurt anymore. And this is all from just doing 2 minutes here, 3 minutes here, 5 minutes here, a lot while driving. And I'm just blown away. Robert Green, who now has passed away from cancer, but at that time, same thing. He was very overweight, probably looking at 450 to 500 pounds. And he knew it. And he had been struggling with that for years, but he had that time lost 30 pounds. He was starting to get his blood sugar under control. I continued to work with him for another 3 years afterwards. He lost a total of, I think, 150 pounds just doing simple things. We're not eradicating someone's lifestyle. These are all just small, simple changes that drivers can do, and quite frankly, anyone can do to take control back over their health and life.
You mentioned one of the women.
Yes.
What's the ratio of men to women in the trucking
industry? Yeah, great question. Overall, that means every position in trucking, it's about 11% of them are women. If you look just specifically at drivers, we're hovering right around 8%.
So have you found that the women truckers you relate to, are they more open to this than the men?
It's so funny you say that, because I would say my ratio of who I work with, 80% are men, only 20% are women. So the women are very open. I believe, so I'm just going to be straight with you. My theory is, I'm a woman, and so I feel like the men are a little bit more willing and open to work with me. Some of the other players in my space are men, And so I don't know if that's actually a positive for me, like it's actually a benefit that I am a woman and not a man, that they're willing to talk with me more or that they're more open. I'm not exactly sure, but that's my theory. And there's just less women in the space. The women that I do work with are great and wonderful, but the men that I'm working with, which are predominantly my clients, they're great. They're absolutely awesome. They want this.
Still ahead on WTMJ Conversations.
Now I feel like I'm at a place where I'm like, where would I share these gifts? What would that look like? I don't know. I'm just kind of trying to stay open.
Hope Zavera from Mother Trucker Yoga talks about how she's getting national recognition.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
I'm Libby Collins. Today's conversation is with Hope Zavera from Mother Trucker Yoga.
Well, you have been getting a lot of notice. Forbes magazine has written about you. You're on Sirius Radio. You have been featured on PBS. I mean, I can list all of these. As you're getting more noticed, are you finding that there are other businesses comparable to this that are reaching out to you in addition to the trucking industry?
Actually, yes. We have worked with security guard officers. I did some stuff with some private pilots. Because the cool thing is a lot of what I'm teaching, so if you just look at a like regular workout or exercise program, it's pretty stock. Everyone's is kind of the same. It just has a little bit different lipstick. I'm very much niched into the premise of adding more movement into your everyday life, that it's all, I call it the 15-minute wellness method. 15 minutes or less throughout the day is all I want you to give me for on-purpose, conscious movement. And then anything above that is bonus. So really trying to meet the person where they're at. And that is one thing I think that really differentiates me from a lot of other people in my space and beyond, is I'm not asking drivers to like rise up to this unrealistic expectation. Instead, I'm recognizing many of them have never worked out a day in their life. They do not consider themselves healthy. They don't know what a fat, carb, and a protein is. And really saying, that's okay. And meeting them where they're at. And saying, hey, let's start here. And it's refreshing. They get to breathe and say, finally, somebody is not judging me.
Is that part of it with truckers? As you said, they're very isolated. It's a very close-knit group of people. Is part of the secret to what you're doing the fact that somebody from the outside is paying attention to them?
You know, that's interesting because I was told the opposite. When I first came in, a few people in the space said, I don't know how you did it. The trucking space does not let outsiders in very easily. But there was something about you that people just open themselves to you. And I have no idea why, but I'm so glad that they did. And so trucking is a very close-knit family. They really get each other's backs. During COVID, a truck driver would give you the shirt off his back if he didn't have one, even if he couldn't afford to buy his own. I mean, it was just the brotherhood and sisterhood in trucking is beyond anything I've ever seen in any other industry.
Are you still teaching classes?
I am not teaching yoga classes anymore, although it's been 5 years now since I've taught and had my studio, and I've thought about it. I've thought about, you know, what would I want that to look like? Where would I want to do that? What do I want that experience to be like? I was pretty burnt out. I felt like the time I left my studio in that space, it was a good thing because I was worn out. I was worn out from instructors. I was worn out from teaching a lot of yoga. I needed a break. But now I feel like I'm at a place where I'm like, where would I share these gifts? What would that look like? I don't know. I'm just kind of trying to stay open.
All right. Well, then looking back, you said you've been doing this for about 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, you had your yoga studio. So 9 years ago, 15 years ago, you were in a certain place. Where do you see yourself in another 9 years or 15 years?
I've been asking myself that same question. What's next for me? And I think one of the things right now that I'm working on is I have partnered with an insurance company and we've gotten backing from the largest insurance company in the U.S., which has been amazing, to bring wellness and health benefits or healthcare together under one roof. So a lot of people can understand this. When you think about a company, wellness programming is over on the right side and healthcare benefits is over on the left side and they never talk to each other. So you have this like wellness coordinator, you have these wellness programs, you might get a kickback on your health benefit side, but they don't interact. There is no cohesion at all between the two. 9 years ago, when I stepped into trucking, that occurred to me and I was like, this is wrong. But no one would listen to me. No insurance company, no insurance agent. Everyone just was like, you're quacking up the wrong hill. Like no one would ever want to include wellness programming in a health benefits program. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And so I kind of just shelved it and put it aside. Well, that opportunity has come to me now a year ago where I partnered with a direct primary care doctor out of Arkansas and a health broker out of Missouri. And we have finally put together a health benefits program. Right now, we're starting with trucking, but really our goal is to be able to offer this to anybody that is looking to lower their healthcare benefits, because we can save, on average, a company about $6,000 per employee per year just off the bat without even looking at their health benefits. But the cool thing is the wellness is included. They get my wellness programming, they get mental health programming, they get substance abuse programming, they get so many other things automatically included. No questions asked. They get that accessible to them. This is how we heal. This is how we bring health to trucking. This is how we change lives. We stop penalizing people for not being healthy and then trying to get healthy and saying, hey, you have to buy this thing over here, or you need to do this thing over here, instead of saying, hey, let's give you the tools so that you can be healthy, so that everybody wins. And I finally get to be able to roll something like that out. So that's really exciting to me.
Hope Zavera, Mother Trucker Yoga. I love that name. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Hope Zavera. She described how she overcame her life of addiction with yoga and how she became an instructor and has found a whole new niche called Mother Trucker Yoga. Now, if you joined us late and you want to hear our entire conversation with Hope, go to WTMJ.com and share today's show with your friends and family. You'll also find a partial transcript courtesy of eCourt Reporters. For WTMJ Conversations, I'm Libby Collins.